God and consistency. Good theory is consistent with itself. Good practice is consistent with good theory. The physical laws of the universe are reliable and consistent and can be depended on at all times. In the same way, Christians believe that God's character can be depended on to be reliable and consistent with love and goodness. They also believe that he has always been this way, and thus there will be consistency in the story of God's interaction with people. The prophets record that God declares that he does not change. Malachi 3, 6. However, there seem to be inconsistencies in the biblical record. A few of these are as follows. The flood story suggests that God did change. During Noah's time he became sorry. Genesis 6, 6. That he had created men and women and decided to wipe them all out. It seems that either God had forgotten that he had originally pronounced all creation good, Genesis 1:31, as he viewed the world, or we must concede that God had changed his mind about the goodness of his creation. At the time of the giving of the law at Sinai, God apparently decided to wipe the Israelites out and start over with Moses' family, Exodus 32:9-10. This appears a very different attitude to that which God displayed in the invitations and promises made to Abraham. Ezekiel assures us that God will not punish the son for the father's crimes. The soul that sinneth, it shall die. The son shall not bear the iniquity of the father, neither shall the father bear the iniquity of the son. The righteousness of the righteous shall be upon him, and the wickedness of the wicked shall be upon him. Ezekiel 18:20. The prophet Samuel is, however, quite clear that the Lord struck Bathsheba's child and it died as a consequence of David's sin. Howbeit, because by this deed thou hast given great occasion to the enemies of the Lord to blaspheme, the child also, that is, born unto thee, shall surely die. And Nathan departed into his house, and the Lord struck the child that Uriah's wife bare unto David, and it was very sick. 2 Samuel 12:14, 15. Has the prophet Ezekiel not read what Samuel has written? Are they referring to different situations? On the surface, these two writers seem to differ markedly. At Mount Sinai, the people are warned not to come near the mountain, and yet those who do go up the mountain were greatly blessed. Exodus 24:9-10. The parable of the sheep and the goats. Matthew 25:31-46. Seems to indicate a fearful, judging God. In the metaphor of the vine. John 15:6. RM 11:21. The unfruitful branches are cut off. In the parable of the wheat and weeds. The weeds are thrown into the fire. Matthew 13:30. But how can God judge and condemn the world in the light of? For God did not send his son into the world to condemn the world, but to save the world through him. John 3:17. Is Jesus different from God? But then God is the source of the grace and forgiveness we received through Christ. 2 Corinthians 5:18. Is the cross a different and temporary revelation of God to prove a point, to make a legal loophole to save sinners? Is God gracious and forgiving, or a strict disciplinarian and legalist at heart? When Miriam rebelled against Moses' leadership, she was punished with temporary leprosy. When Korah, Dathan, and Abiram rebelled, they were executed together with their total families. When Achan stole clothes from Jericho, he was stoned together with his family and animals. When the Israelites stole God's tithes and offerings, Malachi 3, there were no executions as far as we know. Moses is clear that the Lord will never leave or forsake his children. Deuteronomy 31:6-8. From the context, it is clear that Moses was referring to physical protection, yet the Israelites were plundered and carried off into captivity. So how shall we explain this apparent contradiction? The traditional approach by Christian commentators on these stories is that God's promises through Moses were conditional on Israelite obedience, and when Israel rebelled, God's protection left them. Success is then the result of God's promise and my contribution of obedience or loyalty or faith. This is a risky option to take. The human response can never be an adequate foundation on which to build salvation. The response is never good enough, and we are never fully aware of the larger picture of what is happening in the universe. Surely John the Baptist was a hero of faith, and yet he lost his life at Herod's cowardly hand. The bigger picture can result in passages like Isaiah 57:1, Niv, the righteous perish, and no one ponders it in his heart. Devout men are taken away, and no one understands that the righteous are taken away to be spared from evil. To those who walk uprightly enter into peace. They find rest as they lie in death. Another possibility is to concede that while the Israelites were in rebellion and apostasy, they did not want God in their society, yet God did not leave them any more than he left Adam and Eve when they sinned. God was there, possibly unperceived and definitely unwanted. It was the Israelites that left God, not vice versa. He followed, but at a distance, so as not to encroach on their freedom. Paul is clear on the matter. I ask then, did God reject his people? By no means. Romans 11, 1. The Jewish people are still God's people, loved and wanted by God. God is still with them as much as they will allow. It is also helpful to recognize that unrighteousness means, among other things, that sin is unpredictable. In heaven and on the new earth we will reap what we have sown, that is, life will be predictable and fair. On this planet we will often not reap what we sowed, and we will often reap what we did not sow. Job, John the Baptist and Jesus are examples of suffering as a result of unrighteousness. We must not allow unrighteousness to cloud our thinking about God. We leave and desert God. He pleads with us to return. We hate God, Romans 8, 7, but he loves us, Romans 5, 8. If there is a separation between us and God, it is we who have erected these barriers. The apparent inconsistencies in the scriptures are often the result of man's faulty perceptions. Because God warns Noah about the coming flood, the writer assumes that God caused the flood. Because God comes to Sinai in his might and power, the writer of Exodus assumes that God is angry. Because God predicts the consequences of David's immorality, the writer assumes that God destroyed Bathsheba's child and caused Absalom to have sex with David's wives during the rebellion. These are the consequences of sin from which God cannot always protect David, especially when he steps outside the boundaries of the Decalogue. One could take almost any of the stories in the Bible and reinterpret them in the light of God's goodness and kindness, if one is so inclined. However, if one is not so inclined, the apparent inconsistencies remain to trouble those who search for consistency. While we have not addressed all the questions raised in this essay, the principle of a morally good God has been addressed. If God is morally good, then it is our responsibility to speak well of God from a moral point of view. It also means that we will often come to different conclusions than those suggested by the writers and commentators of many scriptural passages and stories. Parables are parables and nothing else. While some parables seem to portray God as a judge, the point is that our choices and actions determine our destinies. The judgment at the end of the world, so common in Christian thinking, may not be what it has been taken and taught to be. To be honest, it is hard to decide when the final judgment actually takes place. At the end of the world, Jesus comes to save all those who are willing. Some are unwilling and call for the rocks and the mountains to fall on them, Revelation 6:19. Rather than be with the Savior of the world, it seems they have judged God unworthy. We do have a consistent God. He has always worked for the salvation of sinners, 1 Timothy 2, 4, and always will. Psalm 106, 43. Many times he delivered them, but they were bent on rebellion and they wasted away in their sin, 44. But he took note of their distress when he heard their cry, 45. For their sake he remembered his covenant, and out of his great love he relented, 46. He caused them to be pitied by all who held them captive. Many, if not all, inconsistencies are a result of misconceptions about God. Why are the misconceptions so popular and so entrenched? Perhaps because we prefer a tame God, a God who is more like we are, because the presence of the real God is problematic for sinners. When he comes, in private or in public, there are not many who respond, "Surely this is our God, we trusted in him, and he saved us," Isaiah 25, 9. His presence has always disturbed us, but for those who will take the risk, his very presence inspires hope for the future and courage to face the present. Grave accent.